And good morning, everybody. I'm going to call the meeting, this virtual meeting of State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order for Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, again, this meeting is being held virtually. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Bonner. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Greenman. Present. Representative Cleborne.
Present.
Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative New Brindley.
Present.
Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
The quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Sprick. First order of business is the approval of the minutes for March 12th, 2021. Representative Claiborne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move that they be adopted as written.
Representative Claiborne moves the approval of the minutes from the March 12th meeting. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? We have our minutes approved. The first bill on our agenda this morning, members, is House File 41, Representative Frazier's. And I'd like to get voted on this by 8:55 so we can get on with our next bill. And members, I'll move House File 41 to be referred to the Committee on Transportation. Welcome to committee, Mr. Representative Frazier. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I believe I do have a motion, an amendment I'd like to move.
Yeah, I see that here. I'll move the A4 amendment. Members, all in favor of the A4 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It's in the shape that you want it. Go ahead, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Ms. Shaw. Just quickly, I'll go through what's in that amendment. So what it does is it adds waiting for COVID tests as directed by an employer and vaccine-related issues to the list of qualifying uses for this COVID leave. It also sets the duration of COVID leave of 80 hours from March 13th, 2020 to March 31st, 2021, and then another 80 hours from April 1st, 2021 to September 30th, 2021, to be consistent with the recently passed legislation for the new stimulus package from the federal government. It also clarifies that leave must not exceed $511 a day. Then it also extends the sunset date to September 30th, 2021, or 30 days after the peacetime emergency, or whichever is terminated at the latest date. So, For everyone by now, we're aware that as COVID-19 spread and states began to take action to contain the spread, Congress initially took action to protect workers that would have their daily lives upended by passing the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that provided funding for up to 2 weeks of paid sick days to address illness, quarantining, or caring for a family member. These actions were necessary to ensure that workers were able to take the time they needed to protect their own health and the health of their families and community members, while maintaining their ties to employment and their income. However, there were exemptions that excluded all workers and businesses with more than 500 employees from any of the paid leave provisions. That meant, for example, workers who are employed in grocery store chains with more than 500 employees were not covered by paid leave protections, in spite of being essential workers who are potentially exposed to the coronavirus every time they report to work. Employers were also able to choose to exempt employees who are healthcare providers or emergency responders from paid leave requirements, a category that the Department of Labor defined so broadly that it included not only healthcare providers, but also virtually anyone else who worked in any healthcare facility, from janitorial staff to cafeteria staff. This bill, the Essential Workers Emergency Leave Act, seeks to capture the workers that were left out. With that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Frazier. I see I've got a list of testifiers here, three people, and one, Ms. Bailey, as a backup or for answer questions. I'll start with Nicole Lissenbach. Welcome to the committee. Please please identify yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Actually, Chair, I am here available for questions, representing the Department of Labor and Industry. Sorry about that.
That's fine. That's fine. Okay, then I have a Troy Bowman. Again, if you want to identify yourself for the record, then proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Troy Bowman. I'm a member of the local union, SEIU, Local 26. I'm a janitor at the downtown Target. I'm here today in support of this bill because I know what people are facing in this current situation. Janitors and many other workers are the unsung heroes in this pandemic. We've been on the front lines, but we've still been left behind. Our job doesn't have the option of working from home. Every day I walk into my job, I worry about the virus that is in the air. Like thousands of frontline workers, I've had to quarantine twice because of this COVID. Once because I was exposed to it, and the second time was when I actually tested positive for it. I was out for 14 days on the first one and 21 days on the second one. Without any pay. Left with how I'm going to pay my bills and keep a roof over my head. I had to use my PTO hours. I was able to receive $300 from my union that it's giving their workers. So I have to make sure that I can pay my bills. I am very frustrated. I'm used to going to work so that I can pay my bills. I asked my supervisor in the beginning of this pandemic, what would happen if somebody would get infected? Would we get paid for this? He told me that he didn't have the answer and that he would get back to me. But needless to say, I found out I was on my own. I remember hearing if somebody caught the COVID and they were working, their employer would still have to pay them under the CARES Act. Well, that didn't happen. There are some employers giving employees COVID pay, bonuses, even with everything that I have put together in my struggle, I'm still trying to catch up. All because I stayed home to help stop the spread of COVID. You tell me why are people being punished for doing what is right? And we want to be, for doing the right thing. We want to be safe and do what's right, but we also want to be able to feel safe and do what's right. But we also want to be able to get paid and be able to pay our bills and keep a roof over our head. Is that too much to ask? I want all of you to think of the frontline workers who have been exposed to the COVID as we try to protect others. It's time for us to feel safe and feel protected. I hope you pass this bill soon, both for the future situations so workers aren't punished for quarantining and pay back those of us who have had to drain their PTO or just go without pay because of what we felt was right and by going to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman. Very, very moving testimony. The next person on my list is Mary Turner. I believe Mary works at the same hospital my mother used to work at, North Memorial.
Oh, awesome.
Ms. Turner, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mary C. Turner. I'm a medical ICU nurse at North Memorial Medical Center in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. For the past year, I've been a COVID ICU nurse at North Memorial. I'm also the elected president of the Minnesota Nurses Association. I am proud to represent more than 22,000 nurses across Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, and Iowa. And we make up 80% of the hospital nurses here in this state. Over the past year, nurses have stepped up, answered our call to duty, and cared for the Minnesotans during this devastating pandemic. We have risked our physical health, and as we've been hearing for months now, our financial security. We nurses know that everyone is sacrificing. We know that we on the front lines are more likely to be exposed to this vicious virus, and we have been. But it was devastating and very confusing to us when the federal government began enacting a series of policies to ensure Americans had access to emergency COVID leave for themselves, their loved ones, and their children. But so many frontline essential workers were left behind. Through this pandemic, we expected to be at risk. That's part of our job. What we did not expect was that nurses and other essential workers would lose hard-earned pay and benefits through no fault of our own. Nurses and other essential workers have been and continue to lose pay to care for Minnesotans in this pandemic. We've lost pay when we're exposed to a COVID positive patient and cannot prove that it happened at work. We lose pay when we've had to wait for test results. Nurses and other frontline workers lose pay when they have to care for positive persons at home, including their children. And nurses lose pay when they cannot access daycare for their kids, including when daycares have closed due to positive cases. Nurses who work for the state of Minnesota were encouraged to see state-provided emergency COVID leave to care for themselves, their loved ones, and their children. However, it turned out that the nurses working in some of the most intense settings in Minnesota, they unexpectedly faced that their leaves were being denied. Our state nurses do valuable work caring for some of the most vulnerable patients in demanding conditions, and we must make sure that they too are able to take the necessary time when impacted by COVID. You know, the nurses, we didn't become nurses for gratitude, and we don't expect thanks. And we're certainly not angels, but what we are is we are humans. And we are humans that are doing a duty and a job that we are called to do. If that makes us heroes, so be it. But we have lived through one of the toughest years in modern history for healthcare workers and frontline workers. And we don't deserve to lose our benefits and our livelihood while doing our duty. We have families too. We have families that some nurses have been afraid to even hug for the past year because they might have a family member who is at risk. All of us, the frontline workers, Troy, and all the frontline workers and all the nurses, we will continue to do our job. We will continue to do our duty, but we need to make this right. We need to pass House File 41, the Essential Workers Emergency Leave Act. And we need to do it soon because we're in need and this pandemic is not over. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. The other testifier, I see Ms. Bailey is here to answer questions as is Ms. Blissenbach. Ms. Roberts, can you explain why this is here with the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, members, the bill is in state government finance because of a small impact to Minnesota management and budget. On page 5 of the fiscal note, you'll see there's discussion of some needed staff time to do some programming changes in the payroll system, and that's about 0.08 of an FTE or $13,000.
So members, questions? Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Frazier, I have just a couple of questions. One, do you know, I know that the state is not bearing the cost of this, so there's a very small fiscal note for us, but do you know approximately what the cost will be to our hospital systems? And it's not just the hospital system, right? It's our nursing homes, it's our hospital systems, all of our healthcare providers. Do you know what the approximate cost will be to them?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brindley, thank you for that question. I do not know what the exact cost will be to our hospital system. But what I can note is that there's been several billion dollars that have been sent from the federal government, and there will be billions more sent with the new legislation that was passed to help support our hospitals that they could use to cover these costs. And I will say, many hospitals, some hospitals did provide resources, and for those that did provide resources, they only have to cover the gap in between what this bill provides and what they provided before. It's not an extra layer on top of that, so they wouldn't double up or triple up on based on what they provided already.
New Brindley, Representative New Brindley, a follow-up?
Yeah, can I clarify that and then have one follow-up, Mr. Sure. Chair, please?
Sure,
thank you. Just to clarify, the federal money you're talking about, are you just talking about the money that will be coming to the state that we then could choose to use? Or are you talking about money that will be going directly to hospitals?
I'm referring to money that is directly allocated
Representative
Sorry.
Fraser.
Sorry, yeah, Mr. Chair.
That's okay.
I'm still getting that part down to wait. Representative Brindley, thank you for that question. I'm referring to money that was allocated specifically for hospitals from the feds.
Thank you.
Representative New Brindley, your follow-up then.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate that. And my next question is, so with the Families First Coronavirus Relief Act, many of these things were already covered. I'm not entirely clear with the language, but it seems like since this is retroactive, how does this work in conjunction with that? You know, we know that the amount of paid leave is higher in this bill. Is the eligibility criteria different? And it seems like there could be a burden for employers that already complied with the Families First Coronavirus Relief Act, that they're going to have to retroactively now go back and make adjustments to benefits they already paid out. Is that likely to be the case with this?
Representative Frazier.
My patience is starting to work. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ridley, thank you for that question. No, it is not anticipated that will be the case. If they have already provided these benefits, and there are some employers that have, and that's great because those are the folks that truly cared for their essential workers and they took care of them while they were working. And if they've already provided these benefits, like I said, there will not be a penalty for what you've done already. There is actually a benefit. If you provided those benefits, you do not have to re-provide those benefits. The retroactivity piece, the way it works is if you did not provide those benefits and an employer had to use their PTO or vacation time and sick time and had to expend that in lieu of providing those benefits that provided in FFCRA, they would have to go back. If the employee is still employed with that employer, they would have to go back to replenish those particular employees. And if it was less than what this bill requires, they will have to account for for that gap there. But we don't anticipate that to be a burden on employers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that clarification, Representative Frazier. I think that you know, I think that the vast majority of businesses, including Target, I appreciate Mr. Bowman's testimony, but I know that I apologize, you know, that you were in that situation because I know that Target actually was pretty good to most of its employees. So I that is a bummer that you, for whatever reason, had fallen through those cracks. But I'm concerned about the bureaucracy of this. The retroactivity,
and the adjustments that hospital systems and all healthcare providers, and even more, obviously this is more broad than that, are going to have to make, even though they already did comply with the Families First Coronavirus Relief Act. Many employers, they're going to gonna have to go back retroactively and adjust benefits that they did already pay out. I think this is a bureaucratic nightmare for them. And I guess I would think through, I know that my question is done, but, you know, there is no federal money specifically to cover this. And I guess I would ask, you know, what specific allocation that is referring to from the federal government. And right now, this is 80 hours past and 80 hours moving forward. There are a lot of red flags in this bill, and I certainly can't support it in its current form today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman, my mouth doesn't want to work today.
Mr. Chair, if I just could clarify a couple of things that Representative Greenman said, just quickly.
Quickly, Representative Frazier, we got four more minutes and we want to get a vote on this, and there's two more questioners. So.
Absolutely. Representative Brentley, there was $2 billion in CARES Act federal funding that went to hospitals initially. The new money that is coming will be going to the states, and states could decide to allocate resources if they'd like to help with from the rescue plan, if they like to help with to cover the cost for some of this. And Mr. Bowman, I just like to clarify, Target was good, yes. Thank you for pointing that out. Target is one of our big corporations here in Mainstay, a child of Minnesota, but his contractor was not good. His contractor did not provide those resources. So Mr. Bowman, thank you for sharing that. And but that is what we're trying to capture, are those employers that did not do the right thing for essential workers.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier.
We can barely hear you.
Okay, excuse me, I can put in headphones, come back.
Here you go.
I can hear you there now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, just lean in.
Thank you, Representative Frazier, for this bill. And, you know, I have heard it now a few times, and I just think when we think about the costs that I think we heard Representative Brindley bring up, it's a year's worth of costs to these families who had to figure out how to miss a paycheck or deal with PTO. And when we think about who has been on the front lines of this fight, I just think that it is on all of us to ensure that our essential workers have the same paid leave that federal law gave other workers. And so it's been a year. It is time that we pass this very simple protection for our nurses, for our frontline healthcare workers, and for our folks like Mr. Bowman, who are keeping our buildings clean so that we can all stay safe. So I really appreciate you bringing this bill. I really appreciate, and for folks who haven't been in the other committees, we've heard tens of workers who come in and tell similar stories about how they are really trying to care for us and to keep us safe, and just are asking for this simple protection when they need to take care of their families or themselves when they're exposed or have to take care for COVID. So thank you, Representative Frazier.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Frazier. It's good to finally meet you. You'd mentioned, I'm trying to get my better understanding. What is the total cost of this bill outside of even just MMB? You know, we talked about the hospitals and what the cost may be there. Do you have any idea of how much these benefits would cost across the state in the state economy?
Representative Frazier, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosick, I do not have the total amount in front of me, but so far it has not been an exorbitant amount that we believe would be cost prohibitive for taking care of the workers that have taken care of us and have taken care of the organizations in turn during this period.
Representative Kosick, follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned about the cost to the economy. We've pumped in a ton, you know, billions of dollars into our economy for similar type items. And at some point, you know, it's these people that testified, you know, they are doing a great service. But so is everybody else across our economy, people in my district that just simply got laid off and, you know, they'd be happy to have, you know, 14 days of paid time off and still have their job. But we've got, according to the Federal Reserve, still somewhere around real unemployment of 10%. And I'm concerned with continuing to put these inflators into the economy that are disincentivizing people to work. And more importantly to this bill, I think the authors said twice in this committee here that we don't know what the real cost of the overall bill is. And that's concerning to me. So I won't be able to support it. As Representative New Brindley had mentioned, there's a number of cautions in the bill, but I appreciate the efforts of people working and the efforts of the author to try to address this, but simply the state cannot address every single issue, so I won't be supporting this.
Representative, that was more of a statement than a and so Representative Duskowski, I want to move on. We got
and
two
so,
more.
And so was Representative Greemans, Mr. Chair.
I understand. Representative Fraser, we got two more questioners, and then we're going to get a vote on this. We don't want to filibuster your bill. Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing the bill, Representative Fraser. So, Representative Fraser, I'm reading the bill, and I heard the testimony. It looks like we're forcing, again, employers, the government is forcing employers to pay people. Now, question, a straightforward question. Are we paying, are we forcing them to pay people to work or to not work?
Representative Fraser.
Representative Nelson, thank you. And Representative Duskowski, thank you for bringing it up because that allows me to clarify something before. These payments or this leave will only be able to be accessed if it is COVID related. It is not just extra vacation time or leave time that folks are going to get to access. It has to fit under the criteria for COVID related situations. There is an extra 80 hours provided in American Rescue Plan. There is also tax credits for employers that are 500 or less. And I will just also say we are also fighting for unemployment around the state for employees that continue to be out of work. So this is a total package here. We are fighting for everything for workers.
Representative Duskowski, a quick follow-up.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fraser. Representative Fraser, I read the bill. Not only is it abhorrent that we are bringing forward bills that force employers to do certain things, to pay people during certain times or not pay them. We are forcing them to pay people not to work. Where, members, are we going when we see bills like this that come forward and have government forcing the private sector to pay people not to work? We're climbing down the steps into socialism, and I'll be voting solid no and look forward to a spirited House debate on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I can't support this bill, and for a lot of reasons. We don't, and the author doesn't even really know the true cost to employers around the state. And I just wanted to echo again, I have two daughters that work for Target, and they took tremendous care of their people. So I think we should be very careful when we're making statements about certain employers, because one of my daughters actually had COVID over the summer of last year and was paid to go all the way through that and was paid once to quarantine. But I wanted to switch over very briefly, Mr. Chair, since I know you want your vote, to conversation around the hospitals. So I used to serve on the board of the hospital that is here in my hometown, and I have great relationships with the leadership there. And I will tell you, if this were to become law, I'm not so sure where they find this money, because they have had to furlough a lot of the elective surgery staff. And it is not laden, the hospital is not laden with money trees as you walk down the hallways. It is becoming very difficult for them to take care of just the employees that they have, the employees that are coming back. This is just not something that I think is the simple snap of a finger that apparently the author might. And, you know, businesses have been heavily impacted and some have been forced to close altogether. So I caution the author to have both 80 and 80 hours, so 160 hours total that may get paid out from places that themselves, the owners or the organizations, are literally wondering how next week is going to happen for them. So for that reason and a myriad of others, I will be voting no and would encourage my colleagues to vote no as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fraser, quick closing on your bill, then we'll get to a vote. And I just should point out that Mr. Bowman said he worked for a contractor that does the cleaning for the Target store, not for Target directly. Mr. Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that clarification. I'll just say we cannot lose sight of the fact that the businesses that, and I am all in support of businesses and entrepreneurship and our small businesses. There's a tax credit for that, but we cannot lose fact that these businesses would not have been able to operate without the frontline workers being there day in and day out. This is not an incentive to not work. This is a disincentive to not come to work while you're sick and spread COVID-19. Again, it only applies if there's a situation with COVID-19. I would urge you to support this with a yes vote. And I would urge you as it moves forward to support this. We're talking about the workers here. Without workers, we don't have businesses. You just need to keep that in mind. Oh, Chair, am I frozen?
Looks like, Chair Nelson, are you, there we go.
I said, it looked like Mr. Fraser froze up. Like I said, I renew my motion. The House File 41 is amended. We refer to the Committee on Transportation. Ms. Spreth, take the roll, please.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleburne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
No.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Representative Quam?
No.
With a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
Most prevails. The bill's on its way to transportation. Thank you, Representative Fraser. The next bill on our agenda is House File 1207 or 1207, whatever. Anyway, Representative Long, and this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative, I'll move the bill to have it on our agenda. Representative Long, you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a straightforward bill. It would add just 8 words of new text to our statutes. And it's designed to deal with the increase in targeting of the homes of elected officials to add an additional option to protect the candidate's home address. Right now, a candidate can request that their home address be private if they file a police report or if they have an order for protection. And these are both relatively high burdens on candidates. This bill would add an additional criterion if a candidate has a reasonable fear for their own safety or for the safety of their family. The reasonable fear would have to be articulated in the affidavit of candidacy. As happens now, the candidate's home address would still be on file as a separate form. Also, as happens now, the campaign would still need to list a candidate's campaign contact address, such as a post office box or a separate address where they could be reached by mail. And for constituents who want to verify that a candidate lives in the district where they are running, the same process applies as does now. A registered voter may petition the filing officer to review the candidate affidavit to make a determination that they do in fact live in the district. And if the address is not in the area, then the remedy is removing that name from the ballot. This bill is a bipartisan effort with Senator Pratt introducing the Senate companion. And I'm hoping we can take this small step to provide additional protection for candidates with reason to fear for their safety.
Thank you, Representative Long. I see Mr. Sigurdsson from the Campaign Finance Board is here to answer questions if needed. With that, members, any questions? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Long, I understand the implications of this having had my own house targeted a number of times and did talk to with my own sheriff. But my question is, how do we assess in your bill what reasonable fear is, and are there standards for that? Are there criterion? I just want to make sure that we have details that are already spelled out if this is to become law.
Representative Nash, or excuse me, Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash, for the question. So the reasonable fear would have to be attested to in the affidavit, and it would be, in my view, up to the filing officer to review that and determine if it was reasonable. I think reasonableness is a standard that's applied pretty widely in our courts and in other systems. There is no standard, for example, right now with the police report. So any police report seems to qualify. So I do think that this would help make sure that folks who have fear but aren't able to take the steps necessarily of going to get a police report can keep their addresses protected. And they still would need to list it, as I mentioned, in writing in the affidavit that is signed and sent into the with their affidavit of candidacy.
Representative Nash, follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And well, Representative Long, I believe that you're a lawyer for a living, and I know that there are many things that do provide for tests when you're trying to establish something. And I'm just throwing out possibilities. If a person taking the report has a different level of what is perceived threat or what is the perception of danger to an elected official or a candidate, does that negate what the candidate themselves necessarily feels about their safety? And I'm just trying to encourage you to put specificity into a bill, because you know a law is only as good as the details that went into its creation. And I don't hear that right now. And I'm not trying to say where I am on this or one way or another, but I'm encouraging you to add details, because if this were to become law and if this were to be put into action, it's going to require a fair amount of meat on the bones in order to make sure that it is enforceable in any jurisdiction that it may get invoked. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are, I think, a wide number of circumstances that could give rise to somebody having a reasonable fear. And so it seemed like it would be difficult to spell them all out. But Representative Nash, if you have suggestions on what additional criteria we might add to the bill, I'd certainly be happy to work with you on that.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, and I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. Look, Representative Long, no disrespect intended, but this is your bill, and I would have imagined that you would have come into committee with an idea of some of the possible details that have gone in there. So I certainly can consider that. And if this does get put into the omnibus bill, I will certainly bring some specific examples. But, you know, again, as the author of the bill, I would have hoped you would have brought us a little bit more. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? If not, we'll lay this bill over. Thank you, Representative Long, for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next bill on our agenda is House File 388. And before I get started with that, members, I was going to say this at the beginning. The public, I've gotten some feedback from emails from the public stating that they can't see our members as they're testifying as they would if they were in the meeting in person. And so we've asked, it's part of our rules, and we've asked to turn your cameras on when you're speaking, if possible. I understand there are some people that have issues with connectivity, and as we saw with Representative Fraser, losing that. I've had some of those issues in the recent past myself. But members, if you can, turn your cameras on when you're speaking and you're asking questions so that the public can see who we are and know that it's us that are doing the talking. And with that, Representative Neuer, House File 388, and I'll move that we refer this bill to the Committee on Human Services. Representative Neuer, explain your bill.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 388 is the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council which advises the Department of Human Services Commissioner on inequities and disparities, particularly for the minority communities and also ethnic and racial diverse communities in the state of Minnesota. Members, we all know the challenges that we have seen through COVID-19, which disproportionately impacted the communities who are underrepresented. This council helps the department to address some of those challenges. This is an important and vital council. So this bill removes the expiration for that for the council. It also brings in the compensation, which is up to par with other councils in the state. The reimbursement is only for the public members for attending meetings and also some of the normal processes authorized under that chapter. So it's only a small stipend that for meetings that occur for the purpose of advising the Department of Human Services. With that, Mr. Chair, I do have individuals who are here to testify on this bill.
I've got three people on the list here, and we'd like to get this voted on by 9:35. So members, if you can be cooperative. Miss Tashonda Williamson, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape, and I hope I said that properly.
You did, Chair. Thank you so much. Again, my name is Tashonda Williamson, and I am the current chair-elect of CECLC. All right, thank you so much. Again, good morning, Chair and members of the committee. It's truly an honor and privilege to speak before you all today. I am also a power case manager with the LINC, which is a nonprofit that was founded by a couple of Viking Hall of Famers here in Minnesota, which uses trauma-informed care and holistic approach to the youth we serve and their families. Again, I'm also the current chair-elect of the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council, CECLC, of the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and appreciate being here with one of our previous chairs, Jean, and also a member of our CECLC leadership team, Petronella. In my tenure, being appointed by the Commissioner Harpstead, joining three of our subcommittees, which is our internal procedure and legislative policy and topics and issues subcommittees, that all take deeper dives in the interworking and procedures, policy, and pertinent areas and issues within the Minnesota Department of Human Services, to then being elected as Madam Chair. The welcome and intentionality partnering between DHS and CECLC, which DHS has stakeholders that are priority members of the CECLC as well, is a relationship that I have personally seen grow and enrich by inviting CECLC members to sit on procedural committees within DHS to be a part of the initial brainstorming, drafting of pertinent policies and or guidelines. We have a ways to go, this is true, but oh, have we come so far. And being able to give that intersectionality in regards to community as it relates to DHS being one of the primal sources of resources for members of the state of Minnesota. And so we really appreciate being in existence and hope that as other committees here in the state of Minnesota, that we are not needing to come back every other year with hopes of extending our existence, that expiration date can be removed. Thank you so much for allowing me to testify on today.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. The next person on the list is Vayong Mua. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And again, I hope I didn't butcher your name too much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Vayong Mua. It's not spelled phonetically, but thank you for asking. I am the Director of Racial and Health Equity Advocacy at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, and I'm also the former chair of the council. Serving on the council has been the honor of my career and will be a honor that I will share with my children. I just want to briefly share the significance and impact of this council. This council today remains as a model for racial and intersectional equity governance and community engagement. I want to highlight a few key impacts of the council. This council created the first, and to my knowledge, the nation's first agency-wide equity policy that covers contracting, procurement, hiring, retention, and career advancement. It covers community engagement, training, and policy analysis itself. And so the approach of the council has really been to balance transforming hearts, minds, and structures. And on that note, there has been a significant case study by Mitchell Hamlin about this council's impact and composition. And I would be happy to follow up with Amanda or your designee to share that case study. And it's actually called Transforming Hearts, Minds, and Structures. The mantra of this council has always been to dismantle structural racism. It requires structural, racial, and intersectional equity. And so at your leisure, I would encourage you to peruse the council's makeup, its charge, and you'll see that it's cross-cultural, cross-sector, across faith, across ability, and is really at the heart of its charge is to embed the lives, the wisdom, and the leadership of communities that experience racism, of communities that experience inequities into the inner workings and core functions of the agency. We all know that an equity analysis is essential for a project, for a plan, for a budget, but the greatest impact are community members with the lived experience, with the insight, with the leadership. And so I encourage you to support this bill. The last thing I'll say about this council is that it has served as a model, as a blueprint for other jurisdictions, MDH, Ramsey County, my own organization, Blue Cross Blue Shield, the largest health plan in the state, has tailored an equity policy because of DHS. And so this work of the council continues today to be a model across the state, across the country. And even though I'm no longer chair, I still get inquiries across the country about how was this done? Why is it working? Why is it so powerful and impactful? So I strongly encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
And if you want to forward that report to Ms. Amanda, we can she'll get that, distribute that to the rest of the committee. The next person I have on my list here is Petra Thomas Shinobi. Ms. Shinobi, I hope I get it pronounced correctly. Proceed, identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Petronella Thomas Shinobi, or Petra. I'm kindly asking you to support this bill, and I'll keep it short. Because as you can see, I'm a community worker. I own a private practice, behavioral health. We provide EIDBI services, that's autism services, therapy services, and ARMS services. ARMS services are services where we go into people's homes and we provide and support them to get back to work, be self-sufficient, and not only that, to live the lives that they want to live. As a result of being on this committee, it has actually given me an opportunity to actually take what I hear from the communities that I work with straight up to DHS and collaborate with them, and at times also participate in formulation of policies. We have a long way to go, very long way to go. And as such, based on that acknowledgement of there's so much work to be done, considering that most of the people that we live with here in Brooklyn Center don't make much in regards to food insecurities, housing insecurities. And not only that, we're looking at COVID. We have a lot of family members who haven't seen family members for 1 year and are isolated. And we are having a high report of depression, and not being able to grieve. And at the moment, one of the issues that I've been bringing forth is we have to be prepared for behavioral health services to be there to provide grief and counseling. Not only that, we have to be there as community workers as well to support the communities we work in financial stability. As such, I really plead with you to support this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas Shinobi. Questions for members? I see Representative Kosnick, you have your hand up. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm having laptop issues, but so my screen is blank, but I've got a second display. So I hope we have time for some questions and discussions, because I don't think questions and discussions are filibustering. To your previous comments, Mr. Chair, I was taken aback by that. But I was wondering, to the author, Representative Neuer, how does this council differ from the ethnic councils that deal with a lot of the equity issues, and in my opinion, should be dealing with some of that stuff in addition to the other legislative policies that we deal with at the Capitol? How does this council differ from those, the other four councils that we have?
Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick, this is not a wide program. It really addresses the inequities and disparities within the Department of Human Services. The ethnic councils are members, as I understand, are included as part of the stakeholders who meet to specifically address those issues within the department. As you're aware of, Department of Human Services core services are really expansive, and having that more focused, more deliberate, and addressing those issues within that jurisdiction is the purpose of this council.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Neuer, I thank you for that explanation. In my work with the ethnic councils on Latino affairs, and having knowledge of the Asian American Council and the Council on African Heritage, and a little bit on the Indian.
sorry about that.
No problem. We spend probably, I don't know the exact total, but somewhere between $800,000 to a little over $1 million among the different councils, each of them. So that's like $4 million that the state is already spending. I don't think that this bill, or the structure of this current council is actually robust enough, and but it is duplicative of what the other councils should be involved in as well. And so I think this is just a case where we're adding extra layers of government and, I don't want to say the word bureaucracy, apparently that's a bad word in this committee, but we're just adding and growing to government, and this council, is sunsetting, and I think that's an appropriate place for it, because the issues that you're talking about could adequately be dealt within human services already, within the ethnic councils and other areas of government. So I won't be supporting it. I appreciate the intention of the bill, Representative Neuer, but I just don't see the need for it, and welcome the sunset, to be honest. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Any further questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 388 be referred to the Committee on Human Services. And with that, Ms. Sprint, can you take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Representative Nash is excused. He's presenting. He said he had two bills up in another committee.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborn?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
No.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
No.
With a vote of 8 ayes, 4 nays, and 1 excuse, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way. Thank you, Representative Neuer. The last bill on our agenda today, members, is House File 1091, Representative Mason. Representative Mason, do you want to make your motion? This is going to the Environment Natural Resources Committee. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Members, I move House File 1091, and as you said, it will be referred to Environment and Natural Resources. House File 1091 provides an appropriation bonds to the MPCA to clean up the freeway landfill. This landfill has collected garbage from around the metro area, from around the state, and the city of Burnsville has hosted the facility over the years. This bill, using the appropriation bonds, will allow them to provide resources to clean up the site and allow for development inside 37 and a half years. And I'm pleased to have the mayor of Burnsville with us today, Elizabeth Couts, to present the details on the project. I know that cleaning up this area is incredibly important to her. So I would like to have Mayor Couts present the issues.
Welcome to the committee, Madam Mayor. If you want to identify yourself for the record, then you can proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, thank you so much for allowing me to come before you this morning. My name is Elizabeth Couts. I'm the mayor of the city of Burnsville. I have been the mayor of the city of Burnsville since January of 1995. So this item before you is a very important item that we have been working on for a very long time. The remediation of freeway landfill and the dump has been a priority for our city for a very long time. And we are pleased that the MPCA is continuing to work on this issue because it is important, not just for Burnsville, but for the people of Minnesota. The ongoing future protection of our drinking water supply and the environment as a whole is one of our number one priority. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, water is an asset to Minnesotans. Water is our resource, and water is life. And so therefore, the city of Burnsville is fully supportive of the MPCA receiving funding to clean up the freeway landfill and dump to protect the Minnesota public. In addition to ensuring our environment is protected, we also strongly support the approach that can also allow for future redevelopment for the benefit of the public as well. We are thankful for the MPCA's innovative approach to bidding out two processes to clean up the freeway landfill and dump, including the dig and haul approach. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, since coming into office, you know, the price tag was not as high as it is today. And I implore you, partner with us for the public safety. We do not want Burnsville or the state of Minnesota to be another Flint, Michigan event. So I ask you, please, to support the MPCA's request. We have been working on this for a long time. So it's the Jordan Hinckley Aquifer, where we draw water from, is not just for Burnsville. There are many communities who draw from this aquifer. And we in Burnsville have done many actions to help recharge the Jordan Hinckley. And you can find all of that data at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and also at the Met Council, because we have done so many things to help protect this water source. Mr. Chair and members, please partner with us. Water is an asset to our state. Water is a resource, and water is life. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've got three people listed here to answer questions. Mr. Kirk Kadelka from the MPCA, Melanie Mesko-Lee from Burnsville City Manager, and Jenny Falknera from the City of Burnsville also. So members, questions? I see we have, unless one of those needs to speak. I see them shaking their head no. With that, Representative Kosnick, you had a question.
More of a statement, Mr. Chair. Representative Mason, thank you for carrying this legislation. And we always think all legislation is important, otherwise we wouldn't be bringing it. But this is important health legislation for the area and the state. So thank you for carrying it as a neighbor to the south of Burnsville and Lakeville. This is something that's been bipartisan and taken on over the years with other representatives. Thank you for carrying that. And thank you for the mayor for being here. And I hope that this is something that we can move forward this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Any further questions? If not, Representative Mason, you want to wrap up and then renew your motion.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I think the mayor's done an excellent job of implying how important it is to get this project done. And I want to emphasize that the bonding bill will provide the resources to the MPCA to get this project underway. I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. And with that, Ms. Sprecht, do you want to take the roll? Representative Mason, did you renew your motion?
Oh, I did not. I move that House File 1091 be referred to the Environment and Natural Resource Committee.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Mason renews her motion that House File 1091 be referred to the Committee in Environment and Natural Resources. With that, Ms. Sprecht, can you take the roll?
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Nash, still excused?
Yep.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborn?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley? Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
I believe Representative Quam said he had to leave early. He had a dentist appointment.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative New Brindley? With a vote of 9 ayes, 1 nay, and 3 absent, the motion prevails.
Those should be excused, listed as excused in the minutes. With that, this bill's on its way to the motion prevails, and the bill's on its way to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Yeah. Thank you, members. That's all our agendas for today. As you notice, it's a little bit lighter this week because it's the second deadline, and we carried the weight for getting most of the bills past first deadline last week. So, members, with that, we are adjourned. See you tomorrow.